The Space God Memoirs. Episode 21. We trudged our way up the last of the winding pass, my calves burning, my hands numb and bloody. As we reached the height of the ridge and passed between those twin spires, I fully expected to see Balnar appearing before me in all its somber glory. But that doomed capital was gone. That great city, like a forest of broken buildings, was straight up missing. In its place was a glassy obsidian plain dominated by a tower. The tower stood tall. No, tall is not the word for it. There was no word for something of that scale, not originating from this tiny ruined planet. It looked more sculpted than built, as if some immense hand had gathered up all of Balnar's structures and mashed them into a singular pillar, its base the size of Ganadria itself, made from blackened stone and charred steel, with various smaller structures connected to the main one, maybe for support. The tower rose up and up and up, and seemed not to stop at all, climbing far above the ground and into the clouds themselves, where it vanished from my view. How far it went, I did not know. There was something terrifying about just looking at the scale of the thing, so big it rose beyond sight itself. Yet I couldn't stop staring. Obviously, that tower had not been here before, in either of my prior visits, when there had been an actual ruin to loot. Who but the goddamned gods could have built something like that, and in so short a time? That was most certainly our goal. I wiped the look of amazement off my face as I heard the heavy clatter of the knights behind me. Their leader, helmetless, walked up to me as if to bark another command, then stopped as she too took in the sight, her eyes as wide as my own had likely been. "So, yeah," I said, glancing sideways at Bakibra. "That's your place, I'm guessing. Unless the gods quested you with venturing into some other impossibly large tower that reaches beyond the limits of our world." "Silence," she said. "This is no place for your attempts at humor." "Yes," she stated. "That is our goal, and your mission is to lead us there. Then your journey will be over." Just behind the captain, I could see more of them, along with Prince Ophiro, who stopped as he got to the overlook. He didn't say a word, but kept his eyes focused on a distant spire, his mouth half open and a shimmer in his pale eyes. The rest of the party I saw was equally silent, all lost in contemplation or wonderment. The two porters looked worst off, Gubbo letting out a gasp and shaking his head in denial as he caught sight of the flattened city and the impossible tower beyond. Rayleigh at the back of the party stared as well, but I caught wonder in her gaze, mixed in with the terror. "What the scrag," I muttered to myself as I sat down on a nearby rock and did my best not to focus on the ridiculous god spire on the horizon. The porters were probably thinking similar things. That we were in over our heads. That we were marching to our dooms, and basically, that we were expendable. The knights and their fate-blessed prince were the heroes here. They were the ones chosen by the lords beyond to fulfill a great destiny and ascend into perfection. Or something like that. Me? I may have been a passable guide. Some guy who happened to know the area and could also fly a ship. But I was no hero. I didn't have psychic superpowers, or even a set of nice gear to compensate for my mortal foibles. I put my head in my hands for a moment, trying to figure out just what in the green ocean I was going to do here, and how exactly I could get out of it. "Hey, Kef," said Rayleigh softly, sitting down next to me. The first words she had said to me since our escape attempt. The knights weren't keeping watch on her for once. Either they were too preoccupied with the tower, or else they knew it no longer mattered. "Hey, Rayleigh," I responded, forcing a vague smile to my lips.
"Crazy, isn't it?"
she said, after a few moments of silence.
"Looks like the end of the Scraggin' world out there."
Purge never mentioned that big tower thing.
Neither did you.
It wasn't there. I guess they must have put it up somehow.
The gods, you mean?
I don't know, I answered. I don't think I know anything anymore. I slumped my shoulders.
We sat quietly for another few moments, listening to the wind whistle. "You know, Kef,"
Rayleigh finally said,
"when we were kids, I always imagined we'd be together as adults, going on crazy adventures, rediscovering the marvels of the old world, exploring all those places we'd heard stories about. But I never thought it would be like this, with everyone dying and everything we know falling apart. I'm so tired. My stomach hurts. All my muscles ache. And I just can't stop thinking what they did to Burge. What they'll do to us. And that tower."
She broke off, looking away for a moment and then turning back to me, letting out a sigh.
"Kef, are we gonna make it through this?"
I wanted to tell her yes. That I had a plan to get us both out of here alive, back to some semblance of safety. I wanted to console her, to be her hero. But all I could do was remain silent, unable to come up with any believable lie. So I just reached out and pulled her close to me. I put my hand on Rayleigh's head and planted a soft kiss on her forehead. Then I just held her in an embrace, light tears coming from my eyes. I'm not sure how long we remained that way, but eventually Rayleigh broke it off, pulled away and sat back down, grabbing her canteen and taking a sip of water. I went back to staring at the crazy tower, dumbfounded. I felt a heavy hand on my shoulder.
"Come on, guide," said Alien. "We're going. No time for crying."
He looked down at me in his moronically cocky way, and if I had a real weapon at that moment, I would have stabbed him. But that not being the case, I shrugged and sprang to my feet. Scraggit, I told myself, as I looked back to the knights and said, "I'm ready, this way." I was pretty sure people were going to be dying soon. But I was damned if it would be me. A cool breeze blew upon me as I stared up at the tower, standing at the limits of what had once been Balnar, amid the shattered ruins of a seaport. If I thought it was damn big from back at the city entrance, it was scraggin' overwhelming from up close. I could barely think as I looked at how huge the thing was. A building that by itself was wider than any city I'd seen, likely the single largest thing upon the surface of Aruvis. It went up indefinitely, the topmost reaches of it vanishing into the oppressive cloud cover. I felt a chill just looking at it. A part of me was still overwhelmed, yet something deep within me was drawn to that tower, eager to see whatever mysteries it held within its alien walls. We paused momentarily as each member of the party came to terms with the sheer immensity of the scene. I took a second to register each of their reactions. Wonder, amazement, a touch of terror at this alien thing that didn't seem to fit in at all in this dusty old world. Alien was the first to speak.
"Well, there it is," he said. "Time to claim our destinies."
Ophiro nodded in approval, and Bakibra raised her gauntlet in the air. The remainder of the party began marching towards what I supposed really was our collective destiny, whatever that meant. I made sure Rayleigh was close by as we began our long walk to the tower. I noticed her legs were shaking as she walked. Mine were too. Still, despite the wonder of what rose up before me, my eyes were drawn to something else very near the base. The glint of metal from a geometric form, still too distant to discern. It took us nearly 30 minutes of marching to get to where it looked any closer, but we barely paid any heed to the shattered port, with its broken metal crates, crumbling stone walls, and remains of splintered docks scattered all across the ground. As we got within range of the Titanic Tower, I beheld the grand gates of it leering down at us. Steel doors etched with a lightning-like pattern that stood tall enough for a giant to walk through. Just being this close to it, I could feel something else. A kind of electrical tingling on my skin. Was it just a sense of awe? Of wonder? Or something more physical emanating from the insides? It reminded me of when I had connected to the ship's mind. By then, I could also see the glimmer of metal I had spotted earlier. From here, it could be discerned clearly as it sat perched upon a raised mound next to one of the tower's support pillars. It was a ship. It had to be a ship. Though I couldn't imagine how it could fly, looking like some weird eight-sided piece of art, or one of the dice they used in games down south, its silvery surface without seams. I couldn't quite tell the scale from where I stood, but guessed it was about the size of old Disa. Our party drew closer still, until the gates of the tower loomed above us, its entrance within 5 paces of our steps. Sir Alien had 1 foot on the stairs leading up to that gate when I heard a sound of heavy footsteps from our left. In moments they came into view from around the lip of the tower's curve, 15 figures in blood-red armor, pikes in hand, and their banner flapping in the wind as they marched rapidly towards us. At their lead was the one called Trevos, the liquid metal of his twist blade warping and changing size as he flipped it from hand to hand. "The evolved ones!" shouted Bakibra, alerting our party. The knights quickly turned to meet this new threat, but even they barely had a chance to act as the red-clad fanatics broke into a collective run, speeding forward in their own power armor. Within seconds, they were on each other, electro-pikes discharging as they clashed against steel blades. Smoke in the air where green blaster beams met red armor. One of the crimson-clad women rushed at Prince Ophiro, only to find herself lifted 2 feet in the air and grasping at her throat in agony. With that reflex-enhancing tech of my own, I barely had the time to pull out my crummy shiv, but immediately realized it would be little use against anyone on this battlefield. I began to back away, motioning for Rayleigh to follow as I scanned the immediate area for somewhere to take cover. Just then, those huge doors swung open, delicately, without effort or sound. A bright light shone forth, flashing over the clashing masses. "Stop!" shouted a commanding but calm voice from within, the voice of a woman. Remarkably, everyone listened, even Trevos lowering his twist blade. There she stood, a vision clad in white and blue, her cyan locks blowing gently in the winds, her purple eyes beaming upon the crowd, the light spilling out from behind her, making the lady seem taller and more regal than even her otherworldly appearance might suggest. I looked up, and my immediate response was to raise an eyebrow. Zerathra? Her head was crowned in 3 bright silver horns, and she seemed somehow bigger. Scrag me, that was her! "My goddess!" shouted one of the evolved ones, falling to his knees in front of the tower steps. His other companions followed. Bakibra and even Ophiro went to their knees, quickly followed by the others. I just stood there shaking my head. Goddess? A second later, I too went to my knees, figuring this wasn't a good time to stand out. 2 beings stepped out from either side of Zerathra. They stood tall in their polished silver armor, from head to toe. Their faces covered in helms molded into feline faces, complete with bared teeth and manes. They each bore matching pikes that glowed with an iridescent light.
Welcome champions,
Zerathra said, her voice just as smooth but a good bit louder than usual.
All of you have been called to this place. Summoned by the gods as the best among your peoples, the finest of this world.
She made a wide flourish with 1 blue arm to indicate to 20 or so people now all staring straight at her. Did that include me? My mind felt a bit frozen at that point. What was she doing here? Of course, a part of me had always kind of figured that Z didn't belong. Ever since I saw her standing so aloof in the middle of that crazy town fight, maybe I'd figured her for a foreigner. Even a witch, scion or something. But a goddess? This girl who I had traveled with? Who I had repeatedly fantasized about? Kind of made sense, actually, now that I put it all together. The light I'd seen in the sky, zooming northward. The fact that she had been standing alone in that evolved order ceremony, as if soaking in all that faith, however dark. She came and went, only seen by people she wanted to see her, flitting about Aruvus like a spirit. It also made a whole lot of sense that she was the reason I was here. Because I'd bragged to one of the scragging space gods, bragged about how I was the best artifact hunter around, had been to Balnar, was rebuilding a spaceship. She had probably given my name to the knights, gotten me dragged on this mission and Burge killed. All because I was a horny bastard who couldn't resist a goddess.
You have passed your first trial,
she continued, her audience enraptured.
You have arrived here, but now within this tower, you will face your true judgment, a test of your worthiness, your guile, your resolve, and your virtue. Those among you who pass these trials of ascension will be exalted, will be raised up to stand as our equals, to be with the gods themselves.
Zerathra raised both arms in the air, while another flash of light erupted from within, washing over the crowd. Then she lowered them and began a gradual stride down the steps, her retinue following behind her as they made their way to the nearby ship.
The tower is ready for you,
she stated, her head turning towards us one last time. Prepare yourselves, but do not tarry. Your destiny awaits. As she walked, or perhaps floated away, our gazes briefly met. For a moment, those radiant violet eyes seemed so close, pulling at me with an almost magnetic force. Part of me felt like it was being crushed, like I should throw myself on the ground and say a prayer, bow down and worship in adoration. Instead, I winked at her, forcing a silly smile onto my lips as the supposed goddess sauntered off to her starship. We all watched as Zerathra and her companions disappeared into the ship. We continued to watch in silence as it ascended upward, no jets propelling it, much like our own ship, silently zooming into the sky until it vanished within seconds. Then the two companies gathered at the base of the tower. The evolved ones, now 11 in number, all looked towards one another, mouthing quiet prayers as they prepared for what must have been the pinnacle of their lives. The groups formed into a circle, everyone looking at each other as if waiting for someone to make the decision, to be the first to enter the tower. Our two porters, along with a few of the unarmored EO, remained at the edge of that circle. I stood about 5 yards away, Rayleigh only a few feet from me. I noticed both Bakibra and Trevos looking to the prince, to Ophiro, whose head was lowered in contemplation. 3 seconds or so passed, and he raised that head, looking out over the party.
The goddess has spoken, he said at last, in a soft voice.
We all know who has been chosen, who the gods deemed worthy to undergo the trials.
At this, I began to back away, not entirely certain that included me. I could already feel a coldness creeping upon me as I listened to the prince speak. I reached out to tap Rayleigh on the shoulder. She looked back and her eyes met. Run, I wanted to shout to her. I didn't need to. Rayleigh nodded.
Indeed, prince, said Trevos. My champions and I battled furiously in the arenas for the right to ascend, slaying any who stood against us. As well, I chose the greatest among all of my knights to undergo this trial. The others, continued Ophiro, have done their part, but the sacred tower is not for them.
Taking Rayleigh's hand in mine, I continued to back away, as subtly as I could manage, but I could see Bakibra shooting her prince a rather disturbed glance. The guardian stepped back, shaking her head. Trevos immediately pulled out his twist blade. There was a whoosh as it expanded out to 2 feet.
Oh, the will of the gods, prince! They will be eliminated, he said. There will be no need for a return journey, after all. No need for anyone to carry your supplies or guard you home.
Ophiro gave a subtle nod of approval. Rayleigh and I stopped being subtle, and both began to shimmy away. Trevos fell into a whirl, his blade spinning in his hand, Blood sprayed through the air as the Slayer hacked into his first victim, the porter Jubbo. A surprised shriek came from his brother Gubbo, who himself died an instant later, his throat severed by the Slayer's blade. I turned and ran, Rayleigh close behind, hoping that we were still unseen, but knowing that was probably not the case. From behind us, I could hear their shouts and the clatter of their armor. Ahead of us were the ruins of Balnar's port, a few teetering walls still standing beside scattered barrels and boxes. We ran for that. It was cover, the closest thing to safety in this forsaken place. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Space God Memoirs. Space God is written, performed, and produced by A.M. Arctos. Original musical score by Alpha Colors. Various sound effects created by Industrial Strength Records Incorporated. Please support this podcast by following, rating, and sharing on your favorite social media site. For further info on Space God, its creator, and various other opinions, musings, and thoughts, go to www.spacegodmemoirs.com or follow me on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. If you enjoyed the Space God Memoirs, please consider supporting us by becoming a patron. Check out the Patreon link in our description to learn more.